Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. You are listening to the final Friday follow-up for Season 14. This week, we heard from Real Crime Profile's Jim Comente. Bob and Jim had a great conversation about Netflix's series Baby Reindeer and the sensation that it's become. I'm joined today by Bob and Janet, and we have a lot to discuss. Bob, before we kick off this final Season 14 follow-up, how do you want to go about this?
I want to get it over with so we can start Season 15. I'm so ready to start Season 15. What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us. Zach came in. I'm still clickety-clacking away on the keyboard, getting season 15 written. Sunday is the day. I've never been this excited to start into a new case. It's one of those. Actually, Janet and I had a meeting last night, and we were talking, talking about what we're doing got me all fired up again. Like, this is one of those cases, like, we have the wrongful conviction that I think that we can do something about. I think we can get this conviction overturned. And there is also a much greater, bigger story here. I think that we can have a huge impact on it. I'm really excited to be doing this with the young folks that are helping me. We just had Caden, one of my students, finished all the music. We just wrapped that up this week. So we have the full soundtrack done. I got those tracks. And Eric and I yesterday put together the first... We spent 4.5 hours putting together the first 2 minutes of season 15. I actually shared a little sneak peek of that with Zach, Janet, and Rabia. I had to send it to Rabia too. So we're ready to go. So let's get this chat about Jim and Baby Reindeer. I don't mean to minimize any of this, but this is not the thing that I'm thinking about right now.
Yeah, you are deep in this. I'm excited. Actually, from me being in here in the office and getting to see you, like, the excitement's back. Like, the excited Bob is back, and it's very fun to see from my end. I get to see it in the office. You guys just get to hear it, but he's ready to go. This is going to be a great season.
I keep saying I'm excited, but I'm excited. That's the word I was looking for. But also, I really like this first episode, too, has more influence from people under 20 than anything we've ever done, because not only do we have the music by Caden and Erica writing and producing with me, and she's helping investigate and research and all the other stuff she's doing. Also, I had, like, when we were, like, workshopping the intro, I had my 19-year-old son and his girlfriend out here helping us with sound design and stuff like that. Like, it's just been, it's really cool to me that we're all coming together to make this awesome thing.
I love the fact that in the office, there are 5 giant whiteboards and they are covered with shit.
Yeah.
So, it's going to be good.
Yeah. I just put some stuff on Facebook Marketplace that's in the way so I can add more whiteboards.
Nice. Yeah. We like this.
It's like tripping over an incubator from when I had the quail. I'm like, why is this in here? I could have a whole other bulletin board over here. So if you're in the market for an incubator,
hit
me up.
You ever seen those scenes in the movies where the guys have the pictures pinned with all the yarn going around?
Oh, yeah.
That's what the office looks
like. Red string, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's real shit. Like, we have our main, what we call the murder board. the big 8-foot board that we keep stuff on. As we're going through stuff that I found or Eric has found, we just keep like just tacking stuff to that that is like so hugely significant to the case, and we haven't even got started yet. So I sound like a small child, ready to go. Janet, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, except I can, every single day that we've talked about this, I get more and more jealous that I am not there, like, working on this. It was so tantalizing to get to work so much more on Pinyon Pines. And so I'm fighting the strong urge to abandon my entire life and go out there and sleep in Becky's library.
I think you should. Listen, for us to work together on Pinyon Pines, I flew out to where you live.
I know.
Like you could fly out to where we live.
I know.
Also, I think the second voice you hear on the podcast on the main episode this week is Zach's.
It's very quiet, but it's there.
Yeah, it's there.
Okay, Easter egg. Got it.
Yeah, little Easter egg.
Yeah.
Zach says good luck.
Perfect. Well, people are really excited about it. I mean, just on the Truth and Justice Facebook page in general, any little sliver of information that you've dropped in there, people have very strong reactions to. They're excited. As usual, people are trying to, you know, kind of suss out maybe what it is beforehand. I know we had some folks who did that very early on. And that excitement is only building. So I cannot wait for Sunday. Even just the little snippet that you sent Zach and me, I got chills. You know, it's just like, oh, here we go. Yeah. Here we go.
And I did drop, if you haven't looked on any of my social media, I did drop the artwork. That was a combined effort.
You couldn't wait on that, could you?
Even I got to give some helpful feedback on that.
You were so excited. You were so excited.
Yeah, well, people started researching it and everything. And I did also send that to the person that's in prison through JPay. And I apparently took it because like we exchanged a few other emails. And then also I got one yesterday. I was like, wow, I just got, this is amazing. It's brilliant. Like, I can't wait. They're super excited about it.
Awesome.
And then all these weird little connections that keep coming in. So my wife got a Facebook message from one of our former students who's now like in his 30s. And he sent this message. It was a screenshot from the person that's in prison who had sent him a JPay message telling him he's like, hey, this guy named Bob Ruff is doing this podcast about me. It's called Truth and Justice. And it starts, you should check it out and tell all your friends. And he's like, is this your Bob? Like,
it's yeah. Like
he knows it, and he lives, LaVon, my student, old student, lives in Indianapolis, but has kept in touch with the person in prison who wrote them. So they're like all these connections.
Oh my goodness.
Yep. Ooh,
very, very cool. Can't wait.
And this is the first time I think that I've done, maybe since Jamie Snow's case, where once the first episode drops, I'm actually going to do a press blitz, because to get done the things that I want to get done, we need local attention to this. So like I'm gonna put out press release to all of our local news stations and radio stations, things like that. And I never do this to promote any of the stuff we're doing, but I may even reach out to some of our podcast friends and see if they'd be willing to drop some kind of promo to it on their feeds. Cause people listen, they listen. I want the people here that are here to really engage. As I always say, I'm a terrible businessman. I'm never trying to really do any marketing. But in this case, it's like we genuinely need to build the biggest army of people we've ever built to make some real. And I think we can make real changes for a lot of people.
I agree. And I think the thing that I'm fortunate enough to know, and Janet, I think you know this at this point, but this case coming forward isn't just a wrongful conviction case. I mean, it's so much bigger than that. And there's so much that can be affected, like you said, and I think this is going to be huge.
Yeah, it's kind of two stories in one. So it's like there's obviously the wrongful conviction we're going to be investigating, but it day one on the streets talking to the people in Benton Harbor, realize that there's a much greater issue here. I was going to say, it seems like they need our help, but there's no seems like. They're literally exact words where somebody needs to help us. And so that's going to be us.
That's what we do. I love it.
Mm-hmm. But we're not here to talk about all that.
Poor Jim Clementi, he can handle it. He's a tough cookie. He can handle that we're like, okay, let's talk about the episode with Jim, even though we all are excited about the season.
Right. No, I was super excited to talk to Jim. Always excited to talk to Jim. What'd you guys think of the episode?
Oh, it's great. I loved his breakdown. Actually, because of his breakdown, Michelle and I went and binged Baby Reindeer for the last 2 days, which was an easy binge, to be honest. Well, it's not easy to watch, but It's a time-wise, it's a
Becky and I went through it in like 2 days too.
Yeah, it's a quick one. It's not easy to watch, but it's a quick one.
Yeah, it's an uncomfortable watch.
Yes, it really is.
But I almost want to watch it again after talking to him, because he kind of gave me more of an understanding of like how important it was, because I was kind of surprised by his take on it. I didn't, because I heard a lot of people that watch it. Some people watch it and loved it, thought it was groundbreaking. Other people were like, "Ah, I don't like this. It's exploitive," and it's. But when Jim really laid out the idea that that's real life from a person who has investigated violent crimes, thousands of them over the years, to see like, no, that's, it's never like it is in movies. Mm-hmm. It's like this. Those issues are so much more complicated.
Yes.
So yeah, I kind of want to watch it again.
I think even before Jim came in, when I heard that the main actor plays himself, I thought that was really interesting, because I know, I kind of knew the basis of it, and I knew how vulnerable he had to be. Mm-hmm. So I think that was huge for me. It wasn't just an actor portraying this person. It was him stepping in and portraying himself, maybe in a different light. And as Jim said, and we all kind of know that things get rewritten a little bit, it's not completely factual because they have to do certain things for TV. But for him to step in and play himself, I thought was amazing. And it made me want to watch it that much more.
What'd you think, Janet?
Oh, I thought it was fascinating. You know, when that series dropped and I started hearing about it, to be honest with you, one of my first thoughts was, oh my God, they're totally going to talk about this on Real Crime Profile, just because I'm very familiar with what they've covered on that podcast and mm-hmm. the fact that they really do tend to be, as soon as something in the zeitgeist kind of addresses something or has in some way some connection to material that they really are passionate about talking about, that they jump on it. So from the moment I heard about it, I was like, oh, they're going to definitely talk about this. There was no question in my mind. And I haven't listened to their coverage on it because I am one of those people who has a very hard time watching it. And so I've watched, I think I might be on the last episode, but mm-hmm. it has been, for those of you who feel like uncomfortable about watching, I mean, I get it. I don't want anyone to feel like shamed that they are uncomfortable or just haven't been able to finish it, because me not watching it has nothing to do with whether I think it has value or whether or not I care about the characters or anything like that. It's very uncomfortable because it is so honest and because it's very hard to see people depicted in this way where, you know, they're making choices in the moment that have a lot to do with where they came from and who they are and why they are the way they are. And you're not always going to be thrilled about those choices. And so for me, there is a lot of, it's very cringy. And I think cringy kind of has a bad connotation, but I think it should be cringy. And I am going to finish it. But again, you know, shout out to those of you who said, like, I've tried and I've really struggled to get through it. I will say this, for the most part, and I could be totally wrong, I feel like our audience is, they're very sensitive and they're already thinking about other people and they're already very interested in psychological reasons people do things. I think if you know yourself, you may already kind of have a strong understanding about some of this material that's covered in this. And, you know, you're not a bad person if it's really painful for you to watch and you just can't finish it. I'm okay with that. I get it, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure it's triggering for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's perfectly fine. You know, and I don't have that experience, so I don't understand, you know, I can't pretend to understand that experience, but that's perfectly fine that people, if that's a triggering thing for them, they don't want to watch it. But for the people that do, I think it's usually, I remember back, I was at some kind of true crime conference. I was on a panel with Josh Hallmark, and we were talking about the use of like certain slurs mm-hmm. in when we're podcasting. And it was, and the discussion was around, like, if you interview someone and they say the N word or they say the F word, and whether that should be edited out. And there was a lot of opinions about how it should be. And Josh is a gay man. And he was just, it was so articulate the way that he broke it down. And it made so much sense to me, because like someone in the audience was said, well, when I hear that word, it makes me uncomfortable. And Josh immediately snapped back and said, good.
Right.
You should be uncomfortable. Like, why would you edit out? And it was just his opinion, right? Of it. But he's like, why would you edit out if someone's being interviewed and they are laying out who they really are and they're saying these words that make you uncomfortable? you should be uncomfortable because it helps you understand the situation better. So I kind of feel like, because I was like Zach, like it's an uncomfortable watch.
Right.
But then really kind of listening to Jim break it down, it was like, it is an uncomfortable watch, but I think like feeling that discomfort maybe helps a little bit with understanding what's
going
on.
Yeah, absolutely.
From somebody like, you know, I can only speak for myself who just hasn't had those kind of life experiences. So I don't really know, you know, what people are going through, and you still don't, but I don't think personally that feeling that discomfort is a bad thing. If it's something you can get through without like really being damaging to you because of your own experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed the conversation. And I see some live comments right now happening in our YouTube, and Fiona says, I loved hearing Jim's mini profile of the interview with Piers Morgan that he describes in your conversation. And I thought that was really interesting too, because that's not something that I had followed up with, even though I was reading about it and that it had happened, mm-hmm. and that person had come forward. And I really enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, me too.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry! These July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Say hello to making everyday routines a bit more magical. Say hello to sunshine and goodbye to boring. Say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that are just friendly. Products that add a little everyday yay to your day. Like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. Doesn't exist, you say? It's just a myth, a legend, a unicorn. Yeah, it's a unicorn. Hello's Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, and it makes brushing fun. Also prevents cavities, strengthens enamel, helps brush away plaque, and all that important toothpastey stuff. And they didn't forget adults. That's where Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste comes in. It takes care of plaque, tartar, and bad breath for a friendly mouth. And it's made with farm-grown peppermint for a friendly flavor. Speaking of friendly, Hello is vegan, cruelty-free, and not tested on animals. So take your day to the next level, a happier one. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
All right, if we can get into it, I know we actually have a few questions this week, so why don't we go ahead and buzz through those?
Sure. Well, first of all, just going back in time a little bit, if you don't mind just recapping, I think a lot of us know, but going back to the source, Margaret Ann says, how did you and Jim find each other all those years ago? You referenced the fact that, you know, you were the first Real Crime Profile guest and that, you know, you had met Jim a long time ago. But just as a quick refresher for those people who maybe don't recall exactly how you guys kind of, you know, how you went into his life and him, you.
Yeah, it was interesting because so Jim had listened to Serial and Undisclosed was airing and he started listening to it. He had actually reached out to Rabia, I think, and offered to profile the case. At that point, I think a lot of people didn't really even understand exactly what profiling was. And Rabia had referred him to me because she was like, you know, we're doing more legal stuff. Bob does more investigative work. Maybe you should talk to Bob. So I still remember the first time I like talked to Jim on the phone, like we got on the phone and I was like, she's like, Jim Clemente wants to talk to you. And she said it as though it was someone I should know who it is.
Yeah.
And as you guys know, I mean, I didn't know who Idris Elba was when I shook his hand. So I didn't know who Jim Clemente was. So I like Googled him. The first thing that came up was his book. So which is not about profiling, really. It's so much. It's about his life experience and him being abused and things like that when he was younger. and then later catching the person that did it. But so I remember getting him on the phone and we start talking and I'm trying to talk to him about his book because I think that's why he I'm struggling to find out why he's a part of this at all.
Bob Ruff.
Yep. But we ended up like on the phone for hours, like talking, just, you know, I kind of figured out obviously what he does and, you know, and we started making arrangements to talk about. Then I had him come on and he did the profile. Certain people you just click with and you just become fast friends. And that was me and Jim. And I was really interested in the work that he did. So I kind of like was reaching out to him to help me better understand how to do behavioral analysis. And he was always willing to help with that. I mean, he would, he's not teaching classes, but he was certainly a mentor and he would even like send me little sample cases for, you know, I was like, well, what do you think about this? You know? So we got to be working like that together. And then when I went out to LA the first time, it was a coincidence that I was there when they started the podcast. The first time John Cryer, who I also didn't know who he was.
Amazing.
The first time John had flown me out to LA to talk about putting together a pitch for the documentary, I was going to LA. I'd never been to LA. And so I reached out to Jim because that's where he lives. And I was like, hey, maybe I'm going to be in LA. Maybe we should hook up. And literally my flight landed. And I text him that, hey, I just landed. And he's like, good. You know, we're meeting right now. Why don't you come over to the house? And so he gave me his address. So my first stop in LA was to go to Jim's house. And I went in the basement and he was sitting in there with Laura and Lisa. I didn't know who either one of them were. Had an amazing interaction with Lisa because I walked in and then she kind of flipped her lid and jumped all over and hugged me. Because apparently he said Bob's coming over and she didn't know who Bob was, but she was a big listener of the podcast. Oh, nice. So when I walked in, she's like, that Bob? Yeah. And so we sat around and I helped them workshop names for the podcast and how it was going to go. They were, and I didn't know they were recording. Right. So we're just talking about what this podcast is going to be. And they're like, all right, well, let's go. And then the three of them went into the booth and I was sitting outside with Lisa's husband in the control room, like listening to the podcast when they recorded the first episode of Real Crime Profile. Yeah. And we have always been friends since then. Every time I've had a question about a case, I've gone to Jim. We've always helped each other out. If he's, you know, needs help promoting something or he wanted me to be on his podcast or him to be on my podcast. So it's just over the years, he's just become, you know, one of my really good friends.
And he came and sat in the audience when we did our December meetup while we were working on Pinyon Pines. He came and was just in the crowd and he asked some questions and we ended up engaging with him. So I think people who listened to the podcast who were there in person got a chance to interact with him.
Yeah, I think I ended up dragging him on stage and making him do this. Since he was sitting there, you might as well come up and do something, right?
Yeah. And then John Cryer showed up and I had just said something. I made like some very specific reference to something. He's like, hey, I just walked in when Janet said she was a broken person or something. Like
right.
That.
Yeah,
like, right. This is surreal. I guess this is pretty surreal at this point.
Yeah, we drugged John away from putting up Christmas decorations with his family.
Good
Jim
people.
Come out, but yep.
Good people. Jennifer says, I respect Jim Clemente a lot, but question his conclusion about Steve Avery's guilt. Avery may not be a good guy, but the investigation seems corrupt. But she's not super familiar with Jim's full analysis of it. And I would say, one of the things that, calling back Josh Hallmark just for a moment, one of the things that I appreciate so much about Josh and, you know, the name of his production company is Studio Both/And, is so much of what I feel like happens in true crime can be both and. It can be a very messed up investigation. There can be corruption and the person can be guilty. There can also be corruption and the person can be entirely innocent. You know, so there's like, I think that's one of those cases where it's really complicated. And I think both and are possible. I'm not saying I'm sure in any way, but for me, that's kind of one of the takeaways.
Yeah. As far as the Stephen Avery case, I'm not terribly familiar with it. I've watched all the documentaries about it. Well, not all of them. I haven't watched the most recent one that kind of combats what they did in Making a Murderer. And I've listened to some of Jim's stuff on it, but I think what you have to realize with all of that is, first of all, the first season of Making a Murderer, anybody that listened way back then, I had said then that they made this guy seem so innocent. And I had just picked up on a few things in the documentary that was like, this was so spun and swayed in a way. Like it did not feel like an honest documentary or docuseries to me. I remember the part where they showed the blood vial and they made a big deal because there was a hole poked in the top of the blood vial. And that was like a huge, like, crescendo, big, you know, mic drop ending to one of the episodes. And like, look at this hole. Someone stuck a needle in here and took the blood out. That's not supposed to be there. Bum, bum, bum. And all I'm thinking of somebody who's worked in the medical field. I'm like, how do you think the blood got in there, dumb fuck? Oops, pardon my language. But it was like, what do you mean? It's not, every blood vial has that hole in it. So it was like that moment right there to me was like, they're not being, because I'm sure that attorney believed that when he saw it, but certainly somewhere along the way, someone had to have said, no, that's perfectly normal, but they still aired it the way they aired it.
Right.
So I think that a lot of people who have their opinions formed about that case or any case comes from the documentary, and you got to understand, like, that's not the full picture. It was done in a certain way to depict things in a certain, to make you kind of think in a certain direction. I don't have a strong opinion on the case. But what I will say is that keep in mind, like, Jim's a professional. He's very good at this. And he was working off the actual case documents that were not part of the documentary. His conclusion, while it could always be incorrect, we always have to be open to that. It's kind of the same thing I always say about me when I'm doing, when people get mad at me because they don't like a conclusion that I come to with one of the cases that we've covered. So you can disagree with my conclusion, but I want you to know that I came by the conclusion honestly.
Right.
Like I analyzed this data. I'm trying to be very clear. This is my interpretation of that data. And then this is the conclusion that I came to. And so many times people want to argue because they don't like the conclusion. They want to attack and argue the person. That's not the case. Like, so, I mean, he came, I will say this, I know Jim well enough to know that he came to his conclusion honestly.
Right.
Could it be wrong? Sure. And could you disagree with it? Sure. But I don't think, because I think part of that comment was a discussion about maybe losing respect for him.
No, that was a different post.
A different comment. Yeah. But I've seen people say, well, I lost respect for Jim when he came to this different conclusion. You shouldn't do that. Whether it's with me or with someone that disagrees with me, it doesn't matter. If the person did an honest analysis of the evidence and came to a different conclusion than you, that was kind of like in the season finale of the reply brief series. What I was trying to explain is, as long as everyone's working with the same set of facts and they're honestly analyzing it, if they come to a different conclusion, that's not a lose respect for them thing. It's not a be mad at them thing. It's just a differing opinion that we should all be. You should be strong enough in your own beliefs that you can be comfortable with someone disagreeing with your conclusion.
Yeah, well said.
It's definitely scary to see all these documentaries because they can be very persuasive.
Mm-hmm.
Making Murder. I watched the first two seasons of Making Murder, and absolutely it was like Stephen Avery is innocent. Mm-hmm. There's no way he's not innocent based on this.
Yeah.
And then you start hearing everything else come out. I haven't watched the second. I think it's called Creating a Murderer or something along those lines. That's like the rebuttal. I haven't watched that one yet, but you do start to realize how persuasive these documentaries are. I mean, just look at like Paradise Lost. You know, that the first Paradise Lost came out years and years and years ago, and people to this day still think John Mark Byers was the predator in this case because of that film, because they kind of portrayed him.
Especially the second one. The second Paradise Lost, you left convinced John Mark Byers had his teeth pulled out because he was chewing on those kids.
Yeah.
And then the third one comes out and then it's like, oh, nope, not him. And that one left you convinced that Terry Hobbs was the one that had done it. And I don't even know that was dishonest, but what it does go to show you is, I think they were doing their best to look at the evidence at hand that they had in front of them. But what it goes to show you is that once you put out that storyline, it's pretty easy to sway people in a certain direction. And that's what I'm care. Listen, this podcast would probably be 10 times as popular as it is. If I did that, right? If I just only put stuff out to just rile everybody up and convince everybody somebody's innocent. But what I try to do is make sure that we're being intellectually honest, putting out all the facts, explaining along the way how we're reaching our conclusions, and then letting people decide for themselves. It's not nearly as popular, but it's the fair and just way to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I, by the way, just want to go back for a moment because I think I just caught up and saw that it looked like we had Dr. Shiloh perhaps here or hopefully still here in from LA Not So Confidential. Another great resource if, for example, you're interested in some of the kind of, the material, the sensitive stuff that speaks to someone's background, their culture, where they come from, what happens to them that causes them to behave in the way that they do. It's another great behavioral analysis forensic podcast where they are very sensitively talking about all of the different ways that people can behave either counter to the law or counter to kindness and compassion. You know, we all are capable of some element of that. But another great resource if you're interested in, you know, what makes people tick and why they do what they do. And they deep dive way back into all of these reasons that, you know, these behaviors manifest and also very sensitive. So another great resource for you there. Lynn is asking a question about the upcoming case. So I'll maybe save that for last. You can decide if you want to give us any more hints. And then we have some questions about any updates on Adnan. We have questions on Kehlani Turner. There was some body cam footage. So I think we've sort of rounded out the gym portion, but we do have some kind of remaining questions that I don't know if you want to maybe get into at all.
Yeah, we can do that. I had put in the post for the follow-up that this is the last of season 14. So this, if you've got your Ask Me Anything questions, this is the time to do it because we're all into the new case starting on Sunday. So yeah, what do you got?
Well, let's touch on the body cam footage. I don't know if you've had a chance to see that. There are links that have been posted on our Facebook page. Kehlani Turner, obviously being the young lady that we talked about when we were doing our missing persons coverage. We also had given the update that her remains had unfortunately been found. Very, very sad case, very emotional case, and something that I know many of us felt very deeply about and have followed since. And the police, there was body cam footage that had been released. And Bob, have you had a chance to see it? Zach, have you had a chance to see it? Any thoughts if you have?
I have not got a chance to see it yet.
Yeah, I watched. I think I read somewhere that there's a link to a longer version of it, but I had watched the kind of shorter version. And it's just, speaking of hard to watch, it's hard to watch. You know, it's very clear that the police, it seems to me anyway, came up to Kehlani in her car with a bias in mind. They thought they were dealing with someone that was up to no good. They thought they were dealing with someone that was on drugs, and they treated her like a criminal, and they were very forceful with her. And now us knowing that none of those things were true, that she was kind of having a breakdown and was having issues with her medications, you can absolutely see how she got so frightened to drive, because, you know, they tried to demonize her, really, the police, to, you know, through the press when that happened, that, you know, she was driving through, vandalizing people's property and driving through fences and doing all this. But then you see that body cam footage, and to me, you can see why she reacted that way. Did you see it, Janet?
Yeah, I did watch it. It's a tough watch. And, you know, I've saw comments from people saying, you know, shame on the cops. I've seen posts from people saying, look, you know, in the context in which they were introduced to what was going on, it just seemed like a reckless driver who clearly was, like you said, there's something going on. They assume drugs, who is destroying property, who is avoiding at all costs being taken by them, and whatever conclusions they're drawing about what that might mean. Either way, it's a really hard watch. And when there was a moment when one of the police officers breaks the driver's side window when, you know, when Kehlani is in it, and that was very hard to watch. It was just very upsetting, very scary. And, you know, I, as a person with, you know, more experience in the mental health world, both for myself and people I care about, than I have in criminal behavior or, you know, drug use that would result in that kind of behavior, it was heartbreaking for me, because and we have the information we have now about Kehlani. It was just very scary and hard. And I could very much see how, if you already were in a place of a breakdown or a psychotic break or anything like that, having police sort of chasing you down, that can very quickly, if not immediately, feel like you're in danger. And so you're trying to do all of these things to keep yourself safe. So it's just heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah. And the big takeaway for me is, for like law enforcement, we've talked about this in other cases, there has to be a focus on de-escalation and community with the police department. And that's what was lacking here. I mean, regardless of what they thought was going on with Kehlani Turner, she was in no way a danger to anyone. You know what I mean? Nothing was on fire. There was no reason for any of that. There was no reason to hurry. There was no reason to break the window. I feel like we would have such a different outcome. And I believe wholeheartedly that Kehlani would still be alive today had they taken a step back, calmed down and spoke to her in a calm manner and treated her, even if she was high on drugs or whatever they thought was going on. The outcome is always going to be better if you approach that person with some sensitivity and in a way to protect them, not just the people that were living in the neighborhood, but whether they're addicted to drugs or whatever the issue is, they're still a human being. These are still struggles that we all have. Everybody's got their struggles. There was no reason whatsoever for them to react the way that they did. And I think if they had learned and put into effect more de-escalation practices, I think that she would be alive. I'm almost sure of it. I think that she could have been coaxed out of that car, or and maybe it didn't. Maybe that took till morning. But so what? What happens? What changes if they don't get her out of that car until noon the next day? Is anybody hurt? No. No one was in danger. There was no reason for any of it.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry! These July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Say hello to making everyday routines a bit more magical. Say hello to sunshine and goodbye to boring. Say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that are just friendly. Products that add a little everyday yay to your day. Like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. Doesn't exist, you say? It's just a myth, a legend, a unicorn. Yeah, it's a unicorn. Hello's Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, and it makes brushing fun. Also prevents cavities, strengthens enamel, helps brush away plaque, and all that important toothpastey stuff. And they didn't forget adults. That's where Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste comes in. It takes care of plaque, tartar, and bad breath for a friendly mouth. And it's made with farm-grown peppermint for a friendly flavor. Speaking of friendly, Hello is vegan, cruelty-free, and not tested on animals. So take your day to the next level, a happier one. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
Yeah, it's hard to hear. I mean, it feels, I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this, but it has that feel, unfortunately, from being a part of generations who have had exposure to the show Cops, and like all of these when everything was just like, let's follow real cops around. And I know that that's still very popular, but you see that body cam footage and you really feel the rush of like adrenaline and testosterone. Again, don't hate me. I'm not saying I hate men. But there's this sense of like, they're talking about her very disparagingly. They're like, there's a sense of like, we're going to get that B, And I mean, they actually might even say something just like that, what I just said.
Yeah.
And that's just very hard. It's very, very hard to listen to. And, again, not to just like keep gushing about LA Not So Confidential, but, that's what Dr. Scott is doing, like implementing this idea of having a mental health care professional who is part of that process. Trying to identify what's really going on and can we de-escalate this and how do we keep everyone else safe, but ideally have a better understanding of what's going on with this person as well and, not make them the quote unquote enemy.
It makes me think when I was watching the video back to when I was a fireman and I had developed a risk assessment model that I used to travel around the country and teach. And it was like this certain set of circumstances. And in that case, the idea was for incident commanders to assess the the level of risk they're willing to take based on what they can actually save. You know, it would seem simplistic, but in the heat of the battle, you know, at a fire, firemen die, firefighters die all the time because of stupid decisions made by an incident commander where they're sending people inside of a house where there's nobody home. There's no life to be saved. The house isn't even going to be saved. So why are we risking people's lives to go in there? So it developed this like risk assessment model. And I feel like there should be something like that on the law enforcement side. Like I think there should be a set of circumstances that they can go through. And the first question should be, is there a threat to life? If there's not a threat to life, then we're going to step way back, you know, and how we approach this. Because my model is based on, is there a life at risk? Is there property at risk? And then also balancing that out with, is that life savable and is the property savable? And that's how you assess how much, you determine how much risk you're willing to take. And in this case, I think it should be something similar to that, but it's based on, is there a risk to life? Is there a risk to property? If so, then what actions are we willing to take? Do we need to break out a window because someone sitting in a car happens to be in a ritzy neighborhood where they don't like, you know, a stranger in their neighborhood? The actions were not warranted by the situation at all.
Yeah. I mean, not to just put very gently push back on that, because, again, I have a real hard time with that body cam footage. I mean, because property is being destroyed and because it's a vehicle, you can see, again, in the moment, how someone very adrenalized would be like, this person is in a car. That is a killing machine. If they get onto a road in this state of mind, they could hit someone and kill them. Like, you can see how you
But I'm talking about before, you know, that.
Well,
you know,
yeah,
before, you know, before she starts, I guess she's always in the car, but, you know, before she starts moving, when she's just sitting there, when the whole incident begins.
Yeah.
How could they address that at that point?
Right.
Because from at least the clip that I saw, they came at her extremely aggressively from Jump Street, right from the beginning. You know, they amped the situation up instead of bringing it down.
Right, right.
Maybe there's a longer version that I haven't seen. And
no, I saw a shorter version where they only show from the point at which she's destroying property. So, okay. But I remember from our coverage of it that mm-hmm. that every sign seemed to be that it could have been de-escalated. So if I absolutely agree. I'm just saying once they're in that mode and that's happening, then, you know, they're like, well, yeah, we gotta, you know, again, I'm not saying I agree with it.
And maybe it was a longer version I saw, because I feel like what I was watching was started before anything really got set into motion. She's just sitting.
Yeah. I saw a news clip where they're showing like, and then by this time she's doing X, Y, Z. And so you're just seeing her kind of like run down the fence. And I'm sure, frankly, that that's the footage, that's kind of the only part of the footage that the police would prefer the public
prior
see.
To that, it started with her just sitting in the freaking
right.
car.
Yeah.
And then they scared the shit. I mean, that's what
horrible.
Happened. They scared
horrible.
The shit out of her and she took
horrible.
Off.
You know, a big thing for me with the whole situation is lack of compassion. And not just from the police, but from the residents that are there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just immediately called the police and said, there's a drug addict here. Please come get them.
Yeah.
They could have tried to see if there's anything wrong. It's just simple. You know, I mean, it's compassion to another human being. It's a very small thing and it's very easy to do. And then so many people lack in it these days. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, Shiloh says in general, that is what police de-escalation is, especially when there's no crime. There's no need to make the situation worse. Why cause worse to happen rather than preventing it? Huge. And Shiloh says spot on, Zach, to what you just said. Sue said she really enjoyed that interview with Jim, has a general question, wondering if there's any progress on Adnan's case. How much longer does he have to wait for this to end? Surely if they tested the DNA of unknown persons, they would have found something by now. And does he qualify for any kind of compensation from the state of Maryland for wrongful conviction and incarceration?
I mean, we're really in the dark with all that right now because we're just waiting for the Supreme Court of Maryland to determine if his conviction remains overturned right now. So I don't know if there's anything happening behind the scenes with Ivan Bates, the new prosecutor. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows if he's still working. Because remember, it was Marilyn Mosby who her office is the one that exonerated him. And then, you know, she's out of office now. Ivan Bates is in office, but it's the case is living up in the Supreme Court right now. So I would like to hope that he's continued on with any DNA work that's being done, but I don't know. As far as compensation, I really don't know about that either. I mean, we're just kind of, we're stalled right now until we get a ruling from the Supreme Court.
Okay. And then let's finally attack Lynn's question here about this upcoming season. Anything you're willing to share? Lynn says, will you share the time between the crime incident, the arrest, and the trial of our new case? Where are they in their appellate process? Has there been any support from outside the immediate circle of this person, or are we the first to reinvestigate this case? Any little breadcrumbs are you willing to drop there? Anything
about
at all?
She's like, are there any little breadcrumbs? I would like these seven specific things.
Classic Truth and Justice, classic Lynn.
Yeah. What can I tell you? It wasn't super long between the incident and the arrest. Trial came 6 months later, about. It was the next year. So this happened in 2001. The arrest happened in 2001, and then the trial happened in 2002. So the convicted person has now been in prison for 22 years for this. Outside, or there's been some attempts at outside help. This is one of the, this is how cases end up with us. There'll be an attempt to help, and then they realize that it's going to take actual investigative work and kind of boots on the ground to do it. And then it got, so that's how it got passed on to Rabia, who then passed it on to me, because this is not a case where it's just like, oh, we're just going to test some DNA. The appellate process is obviously, direct appeals are gone. There's been a shot at habeas already. That's part of what I'm waiting to get from the prosecutor's office right now. I did get half of my FOIA request from them. It's the investigative piece up to the trial, and I'm waiting on the appellate piece so I can see all of that. From my understanding, they made an attempt at representing themselves in an appeal, which is kind of in habeas, which is kind of unfortunate because kind of burned an option. I think with the right attorney might have been successful. At that point, but we've got other things that we've already found that I think they can, we have enough now already, I think, that can get the case back into court. So a big part of what we're going to be doing is obviously fully investigating the case, trying to determine who actually did it, find the information and the evidence that we need to get the conviction overturned, and then get that into the hands of an attorney that can take the ball across the finish line. So I'm very confident about this one. And I'm sure that didn't answer all your questions, Lynn, but that's as good as I can.
There were some clear answers in there. That's great. Super helpful. Very exciting.
You'll find out on Sunday.
I'm looking forward to it.
On Sunday, you'll know the name, you'll know some details, and you'll all be able to start digging. And which by the way, I'm dying too, because I want you guys to, because I'm a bad Googler. So I've already had one of our listeners that is, that has figured out what the case was, that has already sent me. I'm like, yes, I'm having a hard time finding, you know, because it was 2001, there's not a lot online, finding articles and stories about it. And she's like, oh, here's seven newspaper articles I found about it. So I'm looking forward to when you guys tapping into the resource of all of you to digging into more. Because one thing I will tell you that I've been struggling with is I have not been able to find anyone that is related to the victim. And that always drives me. I always, at least whether they're going to come on the show or not, I always want to have that conversation.
Yes.
But it seems like the family, like, I mean, I've been in the neighborhood with people that lived there back then all around that time. And they don't know who he was. They don't know who their family were. I give them some names, never heard of them. So, you know, it's been so long ago. I don't think they're necessarily in the area anymore. So yeah, I'm hoping maybe once we put this out there, that'll change too, as we get moving.
So exciting. And if anybody needed any further proof that you're a bad Googler, they need look no further than finding out what you found out about Jim Clemente and why you thought you needed to talk to him. It's a priceless story.
To be fair, at that time, that was the thing he was most well known for, was his book. You know,
was he? Because he was definitely writing on Criminal Minds. And had already been a prosecutor and definitely had already been a criminal profiler.
Indeed. But this is 2015, right? So like true crime podcasting isn't really taken off yet. And all of us now, these 9 years later, that everybody knows what a profiler is, and everybody, that wasn't necessarily the case back then. We weren't paying attention to who was writing that silly show that Jim's on.
All right, everybody. This has been a great conversation. Looking forward to Sunday. Let's dive into the new case. We love you, Bob.
Yeah, and you know what? That's great, because I don't want to make this edit any longer for Erica tomorrow, because she'll be editing tomorrow while I'm finishing up some of the writing, and I want her to get done so she can help me.
Awesome.
So let's not make it any longer. So all you guys, we love you guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks for putting up with this long bonus stretch of episodes while we get things going. But I promise it'll all be rewarded on Sunday in 2 days when we launch season 15, episode 1, the title of which will be Across the Bridge. Bye, guys.
Can't wait. Thanks, everybody.
Let's go.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com designed, created, manages, and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kay Woodyomnik, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found @BobRuffTruth. Janet can be found @JanetVarney. And Zach is @Z2TheQ. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.